content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, These Cuts Run Deep. As funding reductions hit the triangle, cracks in life sciences R&D begin to widen. Before the cover story, we'll go into the biz section and the reporter pages. Biz this week, as every week, is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Johnny O. Apparel sees interest surge. An upscale sportswear brand with California roots is thriving at its new base in Raleigh and even making the leap to selling apparel for the National Football League. Johnny O. began in California in 2005 when John O'Donnell launched the firm with a line of golf shirts. That line quickly expanded and took off even more when Chris Knott joined in 2016. Knott had co-founded Peter Millar in 2001 and retired from it in 2014. With Knott, Johnny O. began building out its operations in Raleigh. Over the past year, the staff at its offices at the Grove on Wycliffe Road have grown from around 16 to over 40, said Dave Neville, the senior vice president of marketing. Johnny O. has a distinctive look with quarter-zip shirts that represent more than 200 schools. Led by the top-selling University of Notre Dame, the golf shirts, warm-up suits, and shorts tend to be comfortable and lightweight with a price targeted to an affluent audience. Our vibe is really East Coast meets West Coast, Neville said. Johnny O. now has 11 stores, led by the store in Charleston, South Carolina. Its North Hill store, which opened in 2024, is second. Nationally, the brand has a broad base. Our number one state is actually Texas, Neville said. Johnny O. is watching the impact of tariffs. For example, some cotton products are sourced in Egypt and Jordan, Neville said, while other products come from Vietnam and China and Brazil. Switching suppliers isn't feasible given supplies and expertise. The NFL deal gives the company a chance to hike its profile. Johnny O. had long-standing partnerships with Major League Baseball and the National Hockey League, but a deal with the NFL is a different level. In our premium apparel space, we are one of the very few who have that license, Neville said. Fast-growing Holly Springs adds Google Fiber. Holly Springs had a population of 6,658 back in 1998, which would hardly make it a target of a multinational corporation. But 1998 was also the year Google launched, and the California startup that became a global giant now has Holly Springs in its sights. Google has launched G-Fiber, the rebranded Google Fiber, in the booming town in western Wake County. That means Holly Springs joins a group of local cities that includes Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, Cary, Apex, Garner, and Morrisville. In some ways, G-Fiber is finally starting to hit the reach it aspired to when it announced it was launching in Raleigh back in 2015. The company even launched a retail space in Glenwood South in 2017, but what actually was hooking up services was sporadic. Now the service is rapidly expanding in the area. Jess George, the East Region head of the government and community affairs for G-Fiber, said, "This isn't just an investment in infrastructure, it's validation of Holly Springs' unique strength and a catalyst that will accelerate innovation and connectivity for families and businesses alike." The Atlanta Braves rake in cash that others envy. As upgrades around the Lenovo Center plunge ahead, the success the Atlanta Braves have had is noteworthy. The Battery Atlanta, the development around Truist Park, generated more than $25 million in revenue through the first half of the season, Sports Business Journal reported, up nearly 50% from the same period in 2024. Those numbers are sure to get attention in Raleigh, where the Carolina Hurricanes are planning a similar project with high-end housing, retail, bars, restaurants, and office space. Publix continues to expand across the Triangle. Two new Publix grocery stores are coming to the Triangle as the Florida grocer continues to expand in the Triangle. Publix will open a store August 27th at 7330 Buffalo Road in Northeast Raleigh. And on August 30th, Publix will debut at this intersection of Highways 50 and 42 in Garner. Each store will employ approximately 140 people. Publix has been gaining ground in the Triangle's competitive grocery market. Publix rose above Target Corp and Costco to earn the number 4 ranking in the Raleigh area for grocery store market share in 2024. Former Trump lawyer sells Vance County land. A Raleigh product and former lawyer for President Donald Trump has sold land in Vance County for more than $1 million. Sidney Powell, who attended Broughton High School and earned a law degree from UNC Chapel Hill, is listed as the manager of an LLC that sold a roughly 150-acre property for $1.2 million late last month, according to records. The property is 480 Deer Hollow Road and has an address in the unincorporated community of Bullock. The news in transportation and technology is brought to us by Lauren Onosorge. Apex Bus Company files for bankruptcy. A motor coach company based in Apex has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization. Southern Express, which hosts tours of hotspots such as Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and the Outer Banks, listed $3.3 million in assets and about $6.3 million in liabilities. Attorney Jason Hendren, representing the firm, said in an email, the company is operating and will file a plan of reorganization to successfully exit bankruptcy. Among the creditors is Capital Bank, whose $1.1 million unsecured claim is disputed. The claim involves debt tied to 19 coach buses. Buses are central to several other claims, including Prevost Car, Inc., which is owed $325,000 for a 2017 Prevost H3-45 and $350,000 for a 2020 model. The U.S. Small Business Administration has a nearly $2 million claim tied to a COVID-era economic injury disaster loan. Additional liabilities may emerge as Southern Express is a defendant in a pending personal injury case in Martin County. Vehicles, primarily buses, make up $3.1 million of the company's total assets. Company President R. Vance Hoover, the sole shareholder, did not respond to a request for comment. According to the filing, Hoover is a co-debtor and on at least 5 loans, including the SBA debt. In 2020, amid the pandemic, Hoover said the company reported a $1 million loss over 3 months. It's devastating, truly devastating, what is happening in the motor coach industry, he told TBJ at the time. Southern Express received nearly $434,000 in Paycheck Protection Program loans, which were forgiven, but the pandemic's impact was severe. Still, the filing shows signs of recovery. Revenue reached nearly $3.6 million in 2023 and climbed to $4.4 million in 2024. Year to date for 2025, the firm has generated nearly $1.9 million. New Raleigh HQ paying off for Israeli EV firm. An EV-focused software firm is growing in Raleigh despite short-term headwinds in Washington. Drives, that's D-R-I-I-V-Z, an Israeli company that develops smart EV charging and energy management software for companies such as Shell, Circle K, and Volvo, tapped Raleigh for its U.S. headquarters last year. CEO Andrew Bennett said the region has boosted the firm's growth. Despite policy headwinds, nothing is slowing down for us, he said. The U.S. will likely add close to 17,000 EV chargers this year, he said. Drives, which builds the software to help maintain those chargers, has been really, really busy meeting the demand. The company is at 200 people across its organization, but is hiring with a focus on Raleigh. Bennett said the Raleigh office will be about 20% of the overall headcount by the end of the year. We're in the teens that are based out of Raleigh, and we've had really good growth, he said. A Raleigh firm is closer to buying Bald Head Ferry. A Raleigh investment firm is a step closer to purchasing the Bald Head Island Ferry System after an appeals court ruled against the coastal village. The village of Bald Head Island has tried to block Sharp View Capital's move, but Superior Court Judge Jason C. Disbro recently ruled against his claim that it had a right of first refusal to purchase infrastructure assets. Mayor Peter Quinn sent a statement to constituents that the village was, quote, reviewing the decision. Managing partner Doug Vaughn said Sharpview remains under contract to purchase the ferry, parking, and barge infrastructure assets. We hope the latest ruling will clear the path toward our closing on the assets in question in the near term. Demand for international flights grows at RDU. As Raleigh-Durham International Airport continues to expand its flight network, one thing is clear. Travelers want more international connections. According to aviation analytics firm OAG, 9 of the top 20 unserved markets out of RDU, that's routes without a nonstop flight from the airport in 2024, were international destinations. While the top 3 unserved destinations, Honolulu, Milwaukee, and Birmingham, Alabama, are domestic routes, the international contenders are making waves. Over the years, RDU has made strides to fill in the gaps. Air Canada launched nonstop services into Vancouver in June, and the demand keeps climbing. Through June of this year, nearly 172,000 passengers had boarded international flights at RDU, a 45% jump from the same period in 2024, according to RDU statistics. The top 10 unserved destinations out of RDU, according to OAG, Honolulu, Milwaukee, Birmingham, Alabama, Tokyo, San Jose, California, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Tucson, Arizona, Nassau in the Bahamas, Dublin, and Madison, Wisconsin. Ben Tobin is the gentleman who brings us the Greater Triangle section. His top story this week, Charlotte firm buys prime land. This is in Garner. The area around Highway 42 at Interstate 40 on the Johnston County side of Garner may be one of the hottest in the Triangle, and a recent land deal could mean more development ahead. An LLC called 40 Exchange JV, which Secretary of State filings show is connected to investment giant Barings of Charlotte, paid roughly $20 million for around 55 acres off 12025 Cleveland Road this month, according to deed records. That's roughly $363,000 per acre. Creation filings for the LLC were signed by Kevin Miller, Managing Director, Head of Real Estate Acquisitions for the Eastern U.S. at Barings. Barings representatives did not respond to requests seeking comment about the land transaction. The land is zoned IHI, that's Interstate Highway Interchange, which includes uses for restaurants, gas stations, grocery stores, hotels, and offices. The site is wooded and sits between a small subdivision and I-40. Barings Real Estate Division has more than $33 billion in assets under management globally. On its website, it said it has 34 office locations around the world, with 46% of its assets in the Americas. The sale comes amid a flurry of activity in the corridor, a heavily trafficked area 15 miles south of downtown Raleigh. Triangle Business Journal reported in February that Patrick Riley of Carey's Bedrock Investment Group submitted plans to rezone more than 40 acres along Cleveland Road for general business use to build a commercial flex space, according to county documents. Meanwhile, an investor earlier this year purchased about 13 acres off Cleveland Road for just shy of $2.7 million, according to Johnston County deed records. That's almost $211,000 per acre. And last month, the pair of LLCs purchased the shops at Swift Creek at 10 Technology Drive for $6 million, according to deed records. In Wayne County, a Florida builder charts homes near Goldsboro. A Florida home builder that's been active in the Triangle area is planning a new subdivision in a rural county looking to recoup on recent population loss. Dream Finders Homes plans to build 74 single-family homes in the small town of Fremont, north of Goldsboro in Wayne County. The single and two-story homes will range from 1,725 to 2,435 square feet. Representatives of Dream Finders Homes did not respond to requests seeking comment. The home builder purchased the 37 lots for phase one of the subdivision for $2.7 million in June, according to Wayne County deeds. Like some other counties in eastern North Carolina, Wayne's population declined between 2010 and 2020, losing over 5,000 residents. In Lee County, manufacturer looks to expand footprint and add jobs. A manufacturer is looking to expand its footprint in growing Lee County, meaning more jobs for the area. Hydro Tube Enterprises has submitted plans to the Sanford-Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee to add 47,900 square feet to its roughly 68,000 square foot facility at 2645 Mount Pisgah Church Road. The company specializes in tube laser cutting, CNC tube bending, and welding. The company has been at the facility since 2010 and has 43 employees, according to Tim Altus, Vice President of Operations for Hydro Tube Enterprises. The expansion will provide additional space for office, manufacturing, and warehouse. This will give us a total of 116,200 square feet for future growth, Altus said. When complete, we hope to add up to 10 additional employees. Altus declined to share estimated construction costs. Hydro Tube Enterprises was founded in 1969. And in Johnston County, a local developer snags land near Clayton. A well-known developer in Johnston County has spent millions to acquire more than 80 acres in Clayton. Jones Forest, an LLC that lists James Lipscomb as a member in Secretary of State records, purchased a little more than 83 acres off Covered Bridge Road for around $3.7 million last month, according to Johnston County deed records. The land is just north of downtown Clayton. Lipscomb did not respond to requests seeking comment. The land is zoned for low-density residential use. Lipscomb is the founder of Lipscomb Development, which focuses on residential developments around Johnston County. Examples of some of its work include Maggie Way, a 318-home subdivision on the Johnston County side of Wendell, and Academy Overlook, an apartment community in downtown Clayton. New subdivisions have been proliferating around Clayton, given the proximity to Wake County. For example, Atlanta home builder Pulte Group plans to build up to 750 age-restricted homes on more than 360 acres off Brook Hill Drive. The area is also attracting retail development. Castco, based in Columbus, Ohio, has submitted a conditional rezoning request for roughly 74 acres off Clayton Boulevard to develop a shopping center as well as multifamily housing. The real estate and development section is brought to us by Kaylee Thompson. McAdams finds new Durham office. Engineering and design firm McAdams is relocating its Durham office to a smaller space, but its growth plans aren't being downsized. After being in its office at 2905 Meridian Parkway for more than 25 years, McAdams is moving with room to expand, President Mike Munn said. The new office is along Page Road next to the former IQVIA building by Interstate 40. The new office has 19,000 square feet of space, about half the size of its current 38,850 square feet. Durham County records show the lease starts September 1st of 2026. We're very committed to Durham, as so much part of the heritage of McAdams, and we were huge corporate citizens of the city of Durham, so keeping that Durham location mattered a lot to us. The original space we were in, we were utilizing only about half of that, and so it's an odd thing of where on paper it'll be a smaller space, but as far as space, it's actually going to be the same size and just reconfigured and then room to expand, Munn said. The new office will be at the Imperial Center at 4819 Emperor Boulevard in Suite 110. The company is headquartered in Raleigh with offices at Block 83 in Glenwood South. The HQ was moved from Durham to Raleigh in 2022. The Durham headcount is around 90. Altogether, there are a little more than 300 McAdams employees in the Triangle, Munn said. The company is actively hiring. At the root of it is a move for our Durham teammates, and we're always in talent attraction mode. So how can we find office space that's most attractive to continue to grow with people who probably live predominantly on the western side of the Triangle, Munn said about the relocation. Also in Durham, Mammoth Investor charts 178 rental homes. An institutional investor is eyeing a popular spot in Durham to build rental homes. Las Vegas-based AMH has submitted preliminary site plans for the city of Durham for 178 duplexes and townhomes on Olive Branch Road north of Highway 70 and the Briar Creek area. AMH does not have any designated rental communities currently in Durham, though its website lists six single-family rental homes available in Durham. AMH is one of the largest institutional investors in the Triangle's residential market, with more than 2,500 homes owned. The company says it owns more than 60,000 single-family properties across the country. The plan for 68 acres east of Olive Branch Road calls for 40 townhomes and 138 duplexes, including 11 units that will be designated as affordable housing. AMH declined to comment on rental rates, but its other Durham rental homes are around $2,200 a month, according to its website. Amazon Warehouse sells for $44 million. Amazon's newest warehouse in Raleigh has sold for $44 million. Olive Point Capital of Los Angeles bought the DRT3 Amazon Warehouse off New Bern Avenue, according to Wake County records. The warehouse sold by Maris, that's formerly A.L. Nyer, as Freedom Business Park is 100% occupied by Amazon. The tech and e-commerce giant signed a 15-year lease starting in November 2021 with five renewal options of 5 years each, according to Wake County records. A release from Olive Point said it bought the building on behalf of a large family office. The tax mailing address on the deed listed the Radian Investment Management LLC with an address to its office in New York. Glenwood South gets new townhomes. Townhomes aimed at young professionals are being built on the edge of Glenwood South in downtown Raleigh. Holden Barnett Properties is building 16 luxury townhomes on West North Street, with listing prices ranging from $800,000 to $925,000, called Noble Place. The homes are at 710 West North Street, just a block away from Hibernian Irish Pub on Glenwood Avenue in the heart of the city's nightlife and entertainment district. Listing agent Emma Douglas with Land to Listings said the builder is looking to sell to younger people looking to have a home with a garage downtown for under $1 million. The three-story homes range from 1,438 to 1,798 square feet with three bedrooms and a single-car garage. Interior features include 9-foot ceilings, quartz countertops, tiled showers, programmable thermostats, and balconies. Some of the units have rooftop patios. For the Holden Barnett project, 7 homes have already been sold, 3 are move-in ready, and 6 are under construction. The final homes will be complete in the spring. The builder is using Hannah Kuntz of Curated Home Staging and Design as interior designer. Holden Barnett also partnered with Lock 7 Development to develop the Massey condos in downtown Cary. Zach Ezone is bringing us the healthcare and biotechnology section this week, as always. Swiss firm to grow in Morrisville. A European life sciences company is expanding its operations about a year after moving into the Triangle. Solvius is more than doubling the footprint of its laboratory space on Perimeter Park Drive and ramping up hiring as it fills out the site. The company, headquartered in Switzerland in May 2024, selected Morrisville over sites and other biotech hubs for a new U.S. location. Solvius began building an initial 20,000 square feet of space in Morrisville in June 2024. By December, the company was occupying the space. It recently confirmed it has met current good manufacturing practice regulations, rules the U.S. Food and Drug Administration sets to ensure the quality and safety of drug products. With this first phase complete, the company is expanding the site, said Chief Operations Officer Steve Smith. We can launch and run the business now while we build out the rest of the suite, Smith said. It's about filling that out with some extra equipment and going through the GMP qualification process for the second phase. The company is building out the remaining 30,000 square feet of the facility, adding more instruments, equipment, and lab space to support its analytical capabilities for a range of modalities. Solvius operates as a contract research organization focused on providing chemistry, manufacturing, and controls services to biotechnology and pharmaceutical companies. Solvius, which also has a lab near Boston, has hired about 50 employees for its Morrisville lab. When it is fully built out, the site could accommodate up to 200 people or more, Smith said. Solvius works with companies of all sizes with a focus on mid- or late-stage products. Despite uncertainty in the life sciences industry, Smith is optimistic. We've been running nice and steady, but I think the market is starting to get some tailwind to it, he said. Novant grows Cary presence by adding a clinic. Novant Health continues to grow its presence in the Triangle. The Winston-Salem Health System has added an orthopedic surgery center and sports medicine clinic in Cary to its growing network of providers in the Triangle. Performance Orthopedic Surgery and Sports Medicine joined Novant Health on July 28th. The practice provides sports medicine and orthopedic care and has treated more than 19,000 patients since opening in 2009. The clinic was founded by Dr. Milan DiGiulio. The move follows Carolina Family Practice and Sports Medicine, with locations in Cary and Raleigh joining Novant Health in January. The system also operates 2 primary care clinics in Wake Forest, Primary Care Partners, Ligon Mill, and Village Family Care. Novant Health last year filed an application with the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services to build a new hospital. DHHS denied the application. Precision Bio cuts costs to preserve its runway. A longtime biotechnology company in Durham is cutting expenses as it advances efforts to develop a cure for hepatitis B. Precision Biosciences has slashed jobs to focus on its two lead gene editing programs. The move is expected to extend Precision's cash runway by a year into the second half of 2027. The company has not disclosed the number of employees cut, but the headcount reduction includes early research and chemistry, manufacturing and controls positions, a company spokesperson said in an email. Precision, at the end of last year, had 108 employees. The cuts come as Precision prioritizes its gene editing programs targeting hepatitis B and Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Biotech cuts staff as new CEO shifts strategy. A biotechnology company in Durham is cutting employees as it streamlines operations under new leadership. Tune Therapeutics said it is laying off 17 employees, about 25% of its workforce, as the company pursues a potential cure for hepatitis B. The move follows the company's review of its research efforts under new CEO John McHutchison, who was appointed in March. In an emailed statement, the company said it has refined its focus to better align with long-term goals following a strategic review of the company's research priorities. As a result of this review, Tune has focused its research efforts and undertaking a corresponding reduction of 17 employees, the company said. The company did not say how the job cuts would be spread between its offices in Durham and Seattle. Tune Therapeutics, formed in late 2021 around technology spun out of Duke University, is working on a therapeutic modality that would present a new approach for treating diseases. Rather than gene editing, which involves making changes to a DNA sequence, Tune is developing epigenetic treatments by controlling gene expression. This means controlling how a DNA sequence is read and interpreted. The final reporter page is retail and restaurants, brought to us by Kate Tracy. Hillsborough Street adds Burger Spot. A prime property near the NC State University campus has landed a new restaurant tenant just weeks after a longtime dining spot closed. Barley & Burger, a regional smash burger restaurant and bar, is planning to open its fourth location at 1900 Hillsborough Street in October. The full-service restaurant is taking over the space from David's Dumplings and Noodle Bar, which closed last month after 15 years at the corner of Hillsborough Street and Oberlin Road. Barley & Burger co-owner Will Clark said they caught wind of David's Dumplings closure from a friend and got in contact with the landlord, Thomas Carter, in late July to tour the 6,000-square-foot space located on the same block as the Players' Retreat. He had just put up the rent signs on the day that we actually saw the building, so we were just able to get in there quick as soon as David Dumplings was shutting down, Clark said. Barley & Burger's owners have been eyeing Raleigh for a few years, but weren't having luck finding second-generation restaurant spaces. The spot on Hillsborough Street was appealing because of its proximity to NC State. It's just steps from an enormous student housing complex under construction on Hillsborough Street. The Raleigh restaurant will seat 123 people inside and provide outdoor seating. Barley & Burger opened its first location in 2018 in Rocky Mount as a movie-themed restaurant. The business expanded to Charlotte nearly 2 years ago and opened a spot in Smithfield last year. Clark owns the business with his brother Brandon Clark, Travis Ellis, and novelist Etoff Rum. Barley & Burger in Raleigh will have 12 taps for draft beer in addition to cans, bottles, wine, and signature cocktails. The location will hire 60 to 70 full-time and part-time employees. And this is not part of the article, but for folks that have been around here a good while, that was the Darrell's location on Hillsborough Street way back. Firebirds to open in Grove 98 in Wake Forest. A steakhouse and seafood restaurant based in Charlotte is eyeing Wake Forest for its next location. Firebird's Wood-Fired Grill plans to start construction on a new restaurant in September at the Wegmans-anchored Grove 98 development. The restaurant plans to be open next summer, spokesperson Eleni Gates confirmed. Firebird's has restaurants at South Point in Durham, Park West Village in Morrisville, and North Hills in Raleigh. It opened in Morrisville in 2013. Firebird's menu features a number of steaks, including an aged ribeye, roasted garlic sirloin, and a wood-fired New York strip, in addition to surf and turf dishes, seafood, salads, and other entrees. Firebird's is joining a bustling corridor teeming with new retail and residential development. Whataburger is coming, and others include Chopped Creative Salad Company, Summer Moon Coffee, and Sweat House. A California-based chicken concept is coming to Midtown Raleigh. A restaurant chain with a spicy side is expanding its footprint in the Triangle. Dave's Hot Chicken, based in Pasadena, California, has filed permits for a location near the Wegmans in Midtown Raleigh. The space was the former home of BB's Crispy Chicken. This will be its Raleigh debut. The chain currently has one location in Holly Springs and another in Wake Forest, according to its website. The menu features spicy chicken sandwiches, tenders, and sliders, in addition to fries, shakes, and more. In 2017, three friends started the business with $900 in an East Hollywood parking lot, according to the company's website. Now the business has locations across the country. Grub Inc.'s fitness studio and apparel store. A new fitness studio focused on lower body workouts is lunging its way into Grub Ventures' Salvage Yard development, while a vintage clothing store is taking space in Raleigh's Ironworks. Peach Lab, a fitness brand from the Detroit area, is planning to open at 2334 Salvage Yard Drive in early 2026, according to franchisee Corey Gold. Salvage Yard consists of three buildings totaling 100,000 square feet. Peach Lab offers both cardio and strength classes focused on lower body exercises, although one of its classes targets the whole body. Equipment includes squat racks, stair climbers, kettlebells, free weights, and more. Peach Lab currently has four studios in Michigan, one in Tampa, and one in Charleston, South Carolina. Gold plans to start monthly unlimited memberships at $169 after selling out founding memberships. The studio operates as a franchise with a $35,000 initial franchise fee. Gold plans to spend approximately $200,000 to open the studio. She said Grub is spending an additional $125,000. Meanwhile, Raleigh Ironworks has landed Fallback Vintage for 1 year at 1101 East Whitaker Mill Road, Suite 110. The vintage shop, owned by Lori Goodpasture and Laura Browning, will open this fall after hosting a series of successful pop-up events. Let's get into our cover story this week, A Loss That Could Last. A Triangle economy that thrives on research is only beginning to feel the impact of federal cuts. The cover story written by Lauren Rhodes. Paul Maddox waited for weeks to hear about federal grants for his research lab at UNC Chapel Hill, where he studies cell division and the fundamental processes behind cancer. And then came the stunning news this spring. His lab had lost a total of $800,000, which was about 2 years of funding. Maddox was not alone. Shockwaves have rippled across the research and development industry following funding cuts by the Trump administration as it looks to slash federal spending. The administration's proposed discretionary budget for fiscal year 2026 cuts almost $18 billion in National Institutes of Health funding, approximately 40% of the institution's 2025 budget. A Senate committee recently passed a bill that would give the NIH a slight funding increase. Laboratories across the Triangle are grappling with the aftershocks, from senior management at RTI International to undergraduates getting their starts in STEM. You make plans around that funding to hire your people, and you sort of say, okay, you're going to work on this, you're going to work on that, Maddox said, and all of a sudden there's no money to pay these people, and then you're like, now what do I do? And the answer is you have to let them go. Maddox had to cut his lab staff in half, including laying off postdocs and undergraduates in work-study positions, exactly the sort of young, aspirational people who soon become essential parts of a rising economy. And while the immediate cuts have been painful, Maddox and others are concerned about the long-term implications, especially in a market like the Triangle, where the economy is so dependent on research and innovation. Sometimes those investments take a while to pay off, but Wake Technical Community College President Scott Rawls noted that the benefits the Triangle has reaped from 30 years of investments have been apparent in the last 4 years or so. He pointed to Holly Springs, where major investments from Fujifilm Biotechnologies, Genentech, and Amgen have transformed the job market. Defunding can slow down the R&D pipeline and development, Rawls said, especially in areas that would have never existed without the development of that ecosystem. Not every research project works out, and that doesn't mean it was a waste of time or money, he said. It typically leads to the thing that eventually does work out, and when it works out and you have the infrastructure to produce it, then lots of people are rewarded as part of that process. Long-term investments in the Triangle have made it a top destination for researchers in different stages of their career. But many in the R&D industry have expressed concerns about what the long-term fallout of funding cuts might mean for an economy-built innovation. If every lab in the area fired half the people who work with them, you can just imagine the sort of loss of the local economies that would go on, Maddox said. And loss of talent, innovation, infrastructure, and more is top of mind for many, especially for a market that gained a reputation for being a great place to live and work for young professionals. A study released by Automatic Data Processing, that's ADP, earlier this year, found Raleigh to be the top of 55 metros across the United States for young people when looking at annual wage, hiring rates, and affordability. Specifically, the study pointed to the Research Triangle region, listing job opportunities and strong hiring among its strong suits. Maintaining that sense that the Triangle is a desirable and innovative place is critical, Maddox said. It's hard to gain it, but it's really easy to lose it, he said. And that's the thing that scares me the most, is that if we blink an eye and we lose what we worked so hard for, it could be something that you never regain. The Research Triangle began as a deliberate effort to diversify North Carolina's economy in the 1950s. Now the largest research park in North America, Research Triangle Park has become an essential part of the state's economy. The park now has almost 400 companies, startups, and national labs with a total of 55,000 employees. In fact, when North Carolina regained its status as CNBC's top state for business earlier this year, Governor Josh Stein listed cuts to R&D as a key concern for his administration. We just need to keep investing in our people, Stein told TBJ at the time of the announcement. The federal cuts have been considerable. During fiscal year 2024, the NIH alone awarded $1.98 billion in grants and contracts, according to United for Medical Research, directly supporting 21,769 jobs and $4.85 billion in economic activity throughout the state. The top awarded institutions include the University of North Carolina System, Duke University, and Research Triangle Institute, all rooted in the Triangle. But facing sweeping federal cuts, many large research institutions are facing challenges. As of late June, UNC Chapel Hill and NC State University saw a combined $138 million loss in federal research grants. Across the Triangle, universities are cutting spending. NC State has implemented a hiring freeze. UNC Chapel Hill is tightening its spending. Duke University has offered buyouts and is cutting jobs, and Meredith College is cutting about 6% of its employees. All this hits a university network that is a vital link in the Triangle's research ecosystem, especially when it comes to creating new technologies, said Sheila McHale, a serial entrepreneur and co-founder of Asclepios Biopharmaceutical. McHale, chair of the North Carolina Board of Science, Technology, and Innovation, points out that university research leads to innovations that are then adopted by biotech companies and commercialized by pharmaceutical companies. But none of that is possible without the initial findings from the local research. Local chipmaker Wolfspeed, formerly known as Cree, is one such story. As the name hints, the company was born out of an NC State University lab, where the founders were working on silicon carbide projects in different capacities. If the funding isn't there for that basic research academic institution, the whole ecosystem is going to hurt, McHale said. There won't be anything for biotech companies to pull out and to develop, and then there won't be anything for big pharma to distribute, at least not things that are developed here. Alfredo Romero, chair of the economics department at NCA&T University in Greensboro, said the problem with drastic funding changes in short periods of time is that it can accelerate the deterioration of an economic area. While it's too soon for concrete numbers, uncertainty in funding has already led to hiring freezes and in the short run can lead to economic loss. In the upcoming years, Romero said this external shock will test how resilient the Triangle's ecosystem is. It's really going to depend on how long the researchers think that the potential freeze on their grants is going to happen, he said. consultant Eva Garland said when she moved first to Raleigh around 20 years ago to work in NC State's chemistry department, many of her brilliant students would move to New Jersey because there was a lack of jobs in North Carolina for PhD candidates. Since starting Eva Garland Consulting in 2013 and helping institutes identify and secure funding, her firm has been able to hire around 50 PhDs, the vast majority of which are from the Triangle. She said many other local startups hire locally from the highly educated talent generated by North Carolina universities. I think the initial concern that I'm hearing is that if the companies don't have the funds to retain the talent or to hire new talent, then we're sort of going backwards, Garland said. We're going back to where there aren't positions for talented scientists to be able to provide their knowledge to the benefit of North Carolina, and they're having to move elsewhere or take entirely different careers. One economist who studies the labor market also finds evidence of the state's appeal. Jonathan Kunzelman, in a 2022 report, found North Carolina has an in-state retention rate of around 69% among graduates from a four-year institution, putting the state in the top third nationally. The state is training and keeping promising young people who flow into the workforce. Multiple factors influence the migratory patterns of graduates, he said, especially the opportunity and demand. His research has also found that institutions close to vibrant economic areas have a higher rate of staying and working in the area. For example, at NC State, 51% of graduates stayed in the Triangle in 2022. Uncertainty from federal cuts can cause firms not to hire, Kunzelman said, especially for young graduates. And across the Triangle, the next generation of researchers is already being affected. Students throughout the state have reported having higher education offers revoked, internships canceled, and research jobs vital to gaining hands-on experience lost. What we're concerned about is that there's a lack of entry-level jobs, or just jobs in general, Kunzelman said. Research isn't the only loss felt by the local economy when projects are defunded. Intellectual capital, innovation, and production are also at stake. Take Maddox's lab, which has been around for almost 30 years. He has spent years training his staff from undergraduates to his research technician, whose salary he is now scrimping to piece together through the end of the year. Maddox said if he lost a year of funding and research completely, it will set him back a decade. Even if he started applying for government grants now, it would be more than a year before he received any money, if he was awarded funding at all. I lost the people I've trained, he said. I lose internal knowledge. I have to regrow all that infrastructure that I had, and it's so very disheartening. Garland said the bigger concerns she hears from clients is uncertainty and fear. Over the last 6 months, numerous grants have been frozen, canceled, and caught up in ongoing legal battles, leaving institutions unsure about what's going to happen next. She's found that across North Carolina, funds are already being dispersed at much slower rates for fiscal year 2025 than they were in fiscal year 2024, leaving partially developed great science suddenly stagnant and scientists on the hook. The real question, Garland said, is what happens on October 1st? That's where there's been discussions in the federal level about really severe cutbacks to agencies, numbers that we've never seen before, numbers like 10 to 20%, which would just completely take the rug out of their ability to be able to further advance science, she said. Over the summer, Maddox has written to private foundations trying to find ways to accrue funding. He said he's also been making alternate plans in case funds don't materialize. Across the Triangle, many of the institutions facing cuts are gearing up for the upcoming school year when young researchers will return to campus labs and classrooms. While defunding has placed many students in precarious positions, some young scientists have been able to adapt. At UNC, two young researchers, Sarah Jang and Ivy Nangalia, have both felt the fallout of federal cuts. Before Jang's graduation last spring, all of the graduate schools Jang had been accepted to rescinded or changed their offers. Nangalia was supposed to work in a paid position in the lab at Duke before the program was cut due to hiring freezes. Both Jang and Nangalia pivoted and found ways to chase their goals. They also both know of others facing similar struggles who haven't been so lucky. McHale notes that young people will be the most impacted by the impacts of defunding R&D, and she has concerns about taking away from investments that have dividends of good returns, both economically and in the benefits of the research itself. What kind of future are we going to leave, she said. That's how I see it for the next generation. Are we creating opportunities for you all so that you can become a biotech CEO like me? As long as companies continue to invest and the region keeps its momentum, Rawl said, the Triangle will continue to attract people and students. The two things we have to be cautious of is complacency, but also understand that you can stop something much faster than you can build something, he said. And in this region, I think we've demonstrated that we have built something. We've got time for this week's Project Life article, which concerns executive health and worker wellness in the Triangle. A healing network for cancer care. Raleigh-based Pretty in Pink Foundation is helping breast cancer patients afford treatment when setbacks hit. Connie Gentry is the author of this story. In her decades-long career as a surgical oncologist caring for breast cancer patients, Dr. Lisa Tolnich treated women as young as 19 and as old as 100. But it may have been two women she didn't have an opportunity to treat that had the greatest impact. I had two patients with abnormal biopsies that basically disappeared because of money, said Tolnich, who retired from practice 4 years ago and now serves as board chair for the Pretty in Pink Foundation, which she launched in 2004. Difficulty affording treatments is common for patients across all cancer diagnoses. Two-thirds of cancer patients and survivors find it somewhat or very difficult to pay for their care, according to a survey from the American Cancer Society, and a quarter of those surveyed said they had not scheduled or had canceled an appointment because of cost. Pretty in Pink Foundation provides financial assistance for breast cancer patients in North Carolina so they can receive necessary medical treatments regardless of their ability to pay. If you're earning less than 250% of the federal poverty level, are a U.S. citizen and North Carolina resident, and are in active treatment for breast cancer, you qualify for our services, said Becky Horn, executive director of Pretty in Pink. In North Carolina, an individual earning less than $39,000 a year, a family of two earning less than $53,000, or a family of four with income under $80,000, would be at 250% of the 2025 federal poverty level. Across its 21 years, Pretty in Pink has served over 2,500 patients in 97 of the state's counties, and 85% of those patients have been working. That's a huge leap from the initial aspiration when Tolnich hoped to figure out a way that we could help 10 people a year in Wake County. Last year, more than 350 people received direct financial assistance from the foundation, and a total of 486 breast cancer patients were served from all around the state, including 130 served by the Beyond the Ribbon program that provides supportive resources, including bras, prosthetic units, and wigs. Every year, the patient count has grown. Horn anticipates they're on track to serve 50 more people this year than last. In particular, applications from Western North Carolina have risen 48% since Hurricane Helene, and the foundation launched a special campaign, Hope After the Storm, for breast cancer patients in counties designated by FEMA as disaster areas. People in Western North Carolina are getting breast cancer at the same rate they always had, but what's different is that they've lost their businesses, lost their jobs, lost their insurance, not to mention maybe lost their homes and everything else that was important to them. So people that didn't qualify before suddenly qualify for our services, Horn said. A medical advisory committee on the foundation board reviews all the applications that are submitted and sends a letter to each person advising if they have become a champion of the Pretty in Pink Foundation. For its champions, the foundation awards a grant of $2,500 and begins receiving their invoices for medical treatment, paying the service providers directly. Over the last 20 years, the average need has been $2,500, so that's how we arrived at that number, Horn said. When a patient's costs exceed $2,500, then the organization may give them another grant. This was the case with Chelsea Hill, who was diagnosed in December 2023 with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. She was 26, working as a physical therapy assistant, and had no family history of breast cancer. I was playing volleyball and felt a burning sensation in my armpit. My first thought was that I'd pulled a muscle, but it was a strange place to be burning, and I felt the lump as I was assessing myself. I waited a few weeks to get it seen because at 26, cancer is not the first thing your mind jumps to, Hill said. Even her gynecologist didn't think it was anything to worry about, so a month or more passed before she was scheduled for an ultrasound and biopsy in the same day. The next day they confirmed it was cancer. Then things moved quickly, and 6 months later, Hill found herself with $17,000 in medical debt and no end in sight for the cancer treatments. I was probably 2 years into my first job out of school with a basic insurance plan, and my husband had just started nursing school. We were renting, looking to buy a house eventually, all the things you think about when you're a young adult. Then we got hit with this devastating diagnosis. Hill, who works as a skilled nurse, works at a skilled nursing facility in Durham and lives in Mebane, is being treated at Cone Health in Burlington. Paying the medical bills was challenging because while Cone accepted her insurance, everything wasn't covered. Medications and visits with my oncologist were covered, but all my scans, PET scans, MRIs, bone density scans, all those were not covered by my insurance, she said. I had tried to apply for financial aid, but they only provided a 15% discount, and when you've got almost $20,000 in bills, 15% isn't a lot. Cone offered to put $10,000 on a payment plan, but $7,000 had to be paid up front. Nothing seemed feasible, so a hospital social worker provided a list of resources for financial assistance, and that's when Hill found Pretty in Pink. I think it was just 2 days after I sent the application that I heard back I was approved, said Hill, who received an initial $2,500 grant as well as a subsequent $1,500 grant. I'm on oral chemo, which is what they use because there's technically no cure for stage 4 cancer. It's just kind of a palliative, keep it stable so that it doesn't progress kind of treatment. Now at age 28, the outlook is hopeful. Hill has continued working throughout her treatments. Her husband is a nurse at Duke Health, and more importantly, a PET scan in April showed no evidence of active disease, which is the best-case scenario for stage 4 breast cancer, Hill said. Now we just have to keep it that way for the rest of my life, and I hope it never comes back. Hill thinks the localized focus, only serving patients in North Carolina, is one of the reasons Pretty in Pink responded so quickly, and the personal connection that foundation representatives have with their champions also has been a support for Hill, and a reason she enthusiastically participates in community events to raise awareness of resources available to breast cancer patients. Horn, who served on the foundation board for about 10 years before stepping into the leadership role in 2018, also has personal connections to breast cancer. Her mother died of breast cancer, and after her twin sister was diagnosed, Horn felt she was at high risk of developing the disease. She became a patient of Tolnich, ultimately got an early stage alert, and had a double mastectomy. I've never looked back, she said. Project Life exists to shed light on executive health and worker wellness. The series includes regular articles on worker stress, work anxiety, depression, and addiction-related issues that creep into the workplace and personality features from executives that are on the forefront of this fight for better health in our workplaces. The Viewpoint section has letters to the editor, and today we have a guest column from Kevin Franklin. He's the president of the Randolph County Economic Development Corp based in Asheboro. Triad's economic renaissance offers a blueprint for growth. North Carolina's Triad region is experiencing a remarkable economic transformation that's reshaping not just the local landscape, but establishing a new model for strategic industrial development across the Southeast. What's happening in Greensboro, High Point, and Winston-Salem isn't just another business success story. It's the emergence of a world-class transportation and manufacturing hub that's attracting billions in investment and creating a ripple effect of prosperity. The Triad's rise as an economic powerhouse isn't accidental. The region boasts what many consider the second-best road network in the nation, providing seamless access to raw materials and finished goods markets. This infrastructure advantage is amplified by exceptional rail connectivity to major ports, making the Triad an ideal location for companies that depend on efficient supply chains and last-mile delivery capabilities. The FedEx hub at Piedmont Triad International Airport serves as a testament to the region's growth potential, and it's just beginning. The airport has become a magnet for aerospace manufacturing with game-changing companies like Jet Zero, Boom Supersonic, and Honda Jet establishing significant operations. Marshall Aerospace's presence further solidifies the region's aerospace credentials. The Triad's manufacturing renaissance extends far beyond aerospace. Siemens has started producing train cars in Lexington, while Toyota's battery manufacturing facility in Liberty is already shipping products that power the electric vehicle revolution. Thomas Built Buses continues its legacy in High Point, and the Mack Truck Volvo Group maintains its strong presence in Greensboro. Meanwhile, Wolfspeed's operations in Siler City represent the region's commitment to next-generation semiconductor technology. Each company's presence makes the region more attractive to others, building strategic ecosystems that benefit from shared suppliers, skilled workers, and specialized services. The result is reminiscent of Research Triangle Park's transformative impact on North Carolina, but with a focus on advanced manufacturing. Manufacturing batteries, aircraft, and vehicles requires excellence at every level, and the Triad's educational institutions are rising to meet this challenge. Community colleges and universities throughout the region are innovating their programs, creating specialized training that directly supports these emerging industries. This workforce development represents more than just job training. It's an investment in human capital. Workers who acquire advanced manufacturing skills command higher wages, strengthening the entire community. The collective investment from these major companies runs into billions of dollars, but the impact extends beyond the initial capital investment. Better wages create stronger communities, improved amenities, and enhanced quality of life that makes the region attractive to both businesses and families. As North Carolina continues to be one of the nation's fastest-growing states, the Triad's experience demonstrates that strategic economic development can create renewed prosperity. As these investments continue to mature and attract additional companies, the region is positioning itself as a national leader in transportation and advanced manufacturing, ensuring that North Carolina remains at the forefront of American economic growth. Mr. Franklin can be reached at LinkedIn. The big number this week is 800. That's the possible number of new opportunity zones in North Carolina. Another week of excerpts from the Triangle Business Journal is in the books. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We have run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.